Welcome back to Teaching Matters, the University of Edinburgh's hub for discussing, promoting, and showcasing teaching and learning across the university. We're a website, blog, podcast, and most importantly, a small group of people passionate about providing platforms for conversations surrounding teaching and learning. I'm Sylvia, second-year PhD student and an intern at Teaching Matters, and I'll be walking you through this presentation. Today's podcast episode is a sequel to a blog series written by Kirsten Stewart James, Through the Lens of Occupation. I'll let Kirsten introduce herself, the podcast episode, and the blog series this podcast episode builds upon.
Hello, my name is Kirsten Stewart James, and over the last few weeks, I have been writing a blog series for Teaching Matters called Through the Lens of Occupation. So I invite you to go back and take a look at the six blogs, which really set out a potential framework for a pedagogy of occupation. I work as a lecturer and a deputy program director at the moment. I'm actually on secondment with a suite of programs called Edinburgh Surgery Online at University of Edinburgh, who work collaboratively with the Royal College of Surgeons of Edinburgh. So as I said, I'm on secondment there at the moment from my role in the postgraduate clinical education program, also at University of Edinburgh. But alongside this, I'm a practicing occupational therapist. I work in addition to my role at University of Edinburgh, and I have been working as an occupational therapist since the 1990s. And so having this breadth of perspective, which goes across occupational therapy and academia, what I'd like to do in this podcast is tell you a little bit about the inspiration for the blog series, to speak a little to my own experience as both an academic and an occupational therapist, and where I see the links between the two sides of my work life, and also hopefully bring the blog series to life a little bit by talking about a practical example in the form of curriculum transformation, and to give you one example of where a pedagogy of occupation could be one way of thinking about curriculum transformation. It really occurred to me about 10 years ago that there are actually quite close links between my role as an educator and my role as an occupational therapist. And the blog series gave me an opportunity to really look at education, higher education, through the lens of occupation, and to do a bit of a deeper dive as a way of trying to understand why higher education has the potential to very positively influence human health, but also, as we will see from many media stories and publications, also to have a negative impact on health, both for members of academic staff, but also for students. So that really was the inspiration for putting the blog series together. So as before, I invite you to go and take a look at the blog series, which gives a potential framework by looking to the model of Eklund et al. From 2017, a potential model for a pedagogy of occupation, but also thinks about other ways of conceptualizing, for example, the development of AI into higher education, and also thinking about sustainability from the perspective of occupation. Now, blogs 1 and 2 give a bit of background to what's meant by occupation, but I'll also speak to it very briefly here.
To begin with, Kirsten explains what human occupations are, what occupational therapists do, and how they are regulated in the UK. Also, she expands on what occupational disruption, dysfunction, and marginalization mean.
So, human occupations are the things that we do, the things that we need, want, or have to do. So, the things that we need, want and have to do is a way of describing occupational therapy that's used by many organisations, including the Royal College of Occupational Therapists. But what are those things? So the things are our occupations. They're the things that we do to look after ourselves, for example, eating, cleaning our teeth, taking a shower, getting dressed, sleeping. They're the things that we do to earn a living, for example, working, other ways of being productive through our days, such as volunteering. And also, they're the things that we do for the sake of them. They're our leisure activities. So, for example, going for a walk, being out in nature, being creative, those are all occupations. And so occupational therapists use occupations therapeutically to support people either through rehabilitation or through other ways of therapeutically applying occupations to support people either to maintain their health, to regain health, or to participate in the things that are important to people. Now, occupational therapy has been a profession now for approximately 100 years. And in the United Kingdom, occupational therapist is a protected title, and we register with a professional body called the Health and Care Professions Council. But the construct of occupation predates this professionalisation of occupational therapy. And you could see occupations being applied therapeutically during the First World War. In particular, patients who were suffering shell shock took part in what was often called the work cure. So they took part in, for example, activities outside, also things like drama or playing golf, in order to recover from the situations that they'd faced as soldiers. Now, another time when you really saw occupations being used therapeutically was through a time called the Moral Movement, where there was a move away from incarcerating people who had mental health issues and introducing activities such as gardening, farming, being outside, being in nature as a way to more humanely treat illness. So the occupations that people do are really the things that make us us. They're the things that also drive us, they're the things that motivate us, and also they're the ways that we maintain our health. Now, when we cannot take part in occupations that are meaningful and purposeful to us, sometimes that's called occupational disruption. And you can really see this when people perhaps don't have access to the things that are important to them. And an extreme example would be solitary confinement, but also people can experience an occupational disruption, for example, if they were to spend a period of time in hospital. If you've ever done that yourself, you may remember that you felt a little bit out of sorts, perhaps. After your time in hospital, you felt just a little unsure of yourself, perhaps. Maybe you'd lost a bit of confidence. Maybe you noticed that you were finding it hard to do the things that you did before. For example, I don't know, maybe even going out, getting groceries became hard because you were a little bit deconditioned from your time in hospital. But this disruption can lead to something called occupational dysfunction if there's a longer period of time that you're not able to participate in that occupation that's important to you. Also, there's something which is called occupational marginalisation, which is where there isn't opportunity for access to occupations that are important. And you could see this with higher education. You could say that if somebody wasn't able to pay fees to take part in a degree programme, that they were marginalised, that they were being excluded from an occupation, for example, being a student, that was important to them. Now, thinking about then my experience as an occupational therapist, I started to think, well, is looking through this lens of occupation one way to start to understand better the links between health and education. And I've particularly, being a lecturer, being an academic, focused on higher education. There's a long history of occupational therapists being involved with children of school age, supporting school age children to participate in the occupations of being a school child, being able to participate fully in school life, but everything also that will prepare the child or young person for being at school. Now, occupational therapists are starting to emerge as professionals within their own right, within the higher education sector. That wasn't really the focus of these blogs. The blogs was to make sense of the links between health and education by thinking about what could a pedagogy of occupation look like. Now, I won't go chapter and verse back through the blogs, but the blogs make reference to a model by Eklund et al. 2017, looking from the perspective of occupational science, which really is a discipline which emerged in the 1990s by researchers such as Yerxa and others, that really laid the groundwork for developing an evidence base around occupation and health, really to understand what is it about participating in occupations that are meaningful and purposeful to us as people that supports our health, but also when we might be marginalised or disrupted from being able to take part in these occupations that are important to us, how that then can also negatively impact health. So what I wanted to do through the blog series was really look through the lens of occupation to think about how could a pedagogy of occupation make sense of teaching and learning occupations and their links to health? Now, in this podcast, I want to offer something a little bit different from the blog series, because what I'm going to do is to talk about a practical example where you could think about teaching and learning design by looking through the lens of occupation. And I want to give an example of curriculum transformation to do that. Now, in my role as an academic over the last 2 or 3 years, I've been quite involved in curriculum transformation from the point of view of postgraduate study, MSc study. Really, the dissertation historically has been the method by which many postgraduate students bring their MSc to a close. It's often the final piece of work, the final assessment method, a big piece of work that's kind of an expectation of the MSc. However, coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic and also being in an area of academia, which is an area where many health professionals are taking postgraduate education, the dissertation seemed to be really causing quite a lot of anxiety and was a real barrier for many of the students in the postgraduate program actually then to start to bring their MSc to completion. Now, it wasn't that students weren't able to complete the MSc, that they didn't have the academic skills to do that, but it was more the case that the sustained commitment needed to bring the MSc to completion was a real difficulty in balance with the demands of the work roles that the students were in. And so students were taking part in very busy work lives. As healthcare professionals, you might imagine that coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic, perhaps work was becoming less pressurised, but that hasn't really been the case. So coming out of the pandemic, there's actually increased workload from trying to catch up with waiting lists and so on. And also the consequences of perhaps people weren't getting the treatment that they needed during the pandemic, so waiting lists were increased. So now Postgraduate healthcare students are faced with trying to catch waiting lists, increase workloads, and perhaps challenges of retaining staff within the services. So decreased workforce, increased workload. And you can see how then the occupation of their productive life was really meaning that being able to participate in their occupations as a postgraduate student, those occupations were starting to be marginalised because there wasn't the time available then to be able to commit fully to completing a dissertation. Not only that, working in globally focused postgraduate programmes, there isn't equal equity of opportunity for accessing networks of research. So it meant that there was also marginalisation in terms of the occupations of being a student for students who didn't have access to research networks. And so bringing all of this together, then the rationale for diversifying curriculum to still have the full dissertation as an opportunity, it also meant that this was inequitable for other students. And so it meant that the redesign of the curriculum, while still remaining a robust curriculum, had to take into account how the occupations of being a learner sit in balance with the rest of the occupations of that particular student's life, which include occupations of productivity, the work role that they take part in. But we also have to think about making sure that students can still self-care through this, that the workload then of undertaking a dissertation didn't then negatively impact students' ability to also be able to do things such as take part in family life, fulfill their other roles as potentially caregivers, as parents, and so on. And also, of course, importantly, to also be able to self-care, to be able to take breaks. And taking all of this together, the sustained efforts that's required of a dissertation was a real barrier to students being able to bring the MSc to completion. And so whilst the redesign of the curriculum was to offer alternatives to the dissertation, still robust alternatives, still the same number of credits, the same efforts required, but in a way that was more achievable in balance with the rest of the occupations that students were undertaking. And so pedagogy of occupation then relates to that because it's looking at the occupations of learning for the student in balance with the other occupational roles that they have, making sure that there's equity of opportunity to take part in the occupations of learning, and also looking at it from the global context, and also looking at equity of opportunity to take part in the occupations of learning, depending on the local context of research networks that the students have access to. So I'm hoping that by giving this particular example of curriculum transformation, it will help to bring the blog series to life, to give a practical example of where looking through the lens of occupation is one way of thinking about curriculum design. But not only that, it's thinking about the context that the curriculum is being designed for, which goes beyond the university institution and actually thinks about the context that the student is undertaking their studies in and what role the occupations of learning have in balance with the other occupations that they take part in other areas of their life. So bringing this all together and some future thinking for a pedagogy of occupation, a pedagogy of occupation then thinks about the embodied occupations of both teaching and learning. It can be looked at through the lens of teaching, but also through the lens of learning, and thinking about how teaching and learning sits in balance with other areas of that teacher or learner's life, and also thinking about embodied occupations, but also how they're socially situated in terms of other roles and responsibilities that that person has, but also making sure that there is still time for the person to participate in other occupations that are health supporting, such as opportunities to self-care and also take part in leisure activities that are important to that person. So I'm hoping that this particular podcast has made some extra sense of thinking about a pedagogy of occupation, and that the blog series and the podcast taken together might provide a different way of thinking about learning design, of thinking about teaching, and thinking about the context in which teaching and learning is taking place. And I hope that you found it an enjoyable series and that you found this podcast interesting. If you would like to get in touch with me, then please do feel free to get in touch with me through Twitter, X as it's now called, and my Twitter name is TherapyStatim. So if you have any thoughts to share, any comments to make, or if this is something that you think might make sense for your context as well, then do feel free to reach out and get in touch. But for now, thank you very much for listening. I'm Kirsten Stewart-James, and I'll be signing off now. Thank you.
Being an MSc Clinical Education alumna myself, I totally loved this interesting and relatable example of curriculum transformation idea that Kirsten shared. Hope you all found it interesting too. Thank you, Kirsten, for this blog series and also for this podcast episode. We totally enjoyed it. Thank you for bringing it all together for us. Thank you for listening to this episode of Teaching Matters. Teaching Matters is brought to you by the University of Edinburgh's Institute of Academic Development. For more posts and conversations about teaching and learning, head to our blog. We'd be delighted for you to join these conversations. To do so, just email us teachingmatters@ed.ac.uk. You can also find us on Twitter. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider following us on Spotify or subscribing on Apple Podcasts and leaving a 5-star review. Music for this episode was provided by Hook Sounds. In the meantime, stay curious.